Hi, guys.
Good afternoon.
Hi, friends.
What is happening?
Hi, friends.
Joelle, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I am well. I'm just checking on you, mama.
Yeah. I had Donald and I were supposed to record yesterday, and I texted him early in the morning to be like, I woke up with a fever and body aches.
So I'm and you know
take
me.
The morning.
You know me. I was like, yo, get tested.
He's like, it had to be.
No, Donald was probably thinking, like, can I get COVID over my headphones?
No.
Stop.
My heart immediately went to the queen of all things fake doctors, real friends, Joelle Mooney, to make sure that she was okay.
Are you okay? How are you feeling?
I'm much better today. I think it was just, I am a person who has an anxiety disorder. I think I let myself get too stressed. It's made me sick before. I've been hospitalized for it before, so I, you know, use all my toolbox stuff, and I was like, you know, let me just take a few hours to calm down and then get back in it. And so I did, and I felt much better by like mid-afternoon, and no signs this morning. So I think we're good. Still scheduled a test anyway, just to be safe, but I think we're fine.
Is there anything Donald and I can do to lessen your anxiety?
Nope. Y'all are great.
Okay. As long as
that's a me and my therapist thing.
I know it's a personal thing and you don't have to share it with the world, but I want you to know that if there's anything at all that's contributing to your anxiety that comes from Donald and I, we can change it.
That's very sweet.
Donald
Thank
could
you.
Be kinder.
Whoa.
Wow.
Right out the gate.
If I'm any kinder, I am Stan. And then it's dangerous. I missed you too. You know what, man? I'm going to tell you something right now, buddy.
Go ahead.
The world has been set ablaze by Meghan Markle and Harry.
Ooh.
Oh, yeah.
Set ablaze, dude.
Yeah. Did you? I only watched some clips. I didn't watch that.
Dude, all I had to hear was the baby's skin color, and that was a. I was like, dude, I don't give. I could care less about everything else. That's the one thing that I targeted on right away. Like, wait, say what? Hold on, what? They said what? Right away, dude. Right away. I don't know about y'all.
Get help for being suicidal was definitely a trigger for me.
Right away. That was another one. That was another one where I was
I
like,
was
wait
like,
a
word?
Second.
Yeah, that was really frightening, actually, to hear her say that she was suicidal and wanted to seek an in-treatment program somewhere. And they were like, no, we're sorry.
The fact
that's insane. I mean, that's crazy.
Yeah, the fact that she recognized it and was like, yo, I need help.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And
that's
wasn't
the hardest part.
It.
And then they were just like, no, that was nuts. Tyler Perry gave them shelter. Oh, my God. That was crazy to me.
What do you mean Tyler Perry gave them shelter?
Well, he freaking put them up for a bit, right? Didn't they stay at his house or something like that?
Yeah, so when they left, they didn't get anything from the palace. You know, like, they don't have real jobs. And so luckily Harry's mother left him what amounted to being 40 million after incurred costs and all of that. So they were able to get out of the country, but then they couldn't go anywhere immediately. And so Tyler Perry is like, here's a house, stay in it. It's mine. Just chill. Get back on your feet.
Tyler's like, I don't even know which, it's one of my mansions. No one's even in it.
It really is an interesting story. If here's where it gets crazy. They thought this was the end of it. This is definitely not the end of it. You know what I mean?
Well, they're going to, I haven't been following it.
You want
to
be,
they're going to have to make a statement or something. I'm dying to know what their side of the story is.
The palace did make a statement. They made a statement already. And it was a positive statement from what I heard.
It was a pretty good one.
Yeah.
Pretty.
They were very much like,
Well, at least they're hiding out somewhere nice in Santa Barbara near Oprah.
Truly.
And 40 million should cover a nice style of living for them.
Agreed. I'll take 40 million.
They can just chill with their chickens and Oprah.
You give me 40 million,
What are you gonna do? We learned you're gonna build a submarine, a submerged.
No, that's with the money of forever.
Oh, really? So with 40 million, you wouldn't build like a small sub, like a little pocket sub, like one of those ones James Cameron's always He's looking for shipwrecks in. This is how he drives, too. He drives like this.
I would like one of them.
Where's my shipwreck? Man, that man loves. The only thing that guy loves. The only thing that guy loves more than making a giant movie is finding a shipwreck.
There's treasure in shipwrecks.
That's like his hobby, is like getting in a sub and looking for shipwrecks.
He's probably made more money finding shipwrecks than he did with any of his movies, including
you and
Avatar.
I go. You and That's I go play probably... tennis. You and I go play tennis. He's like, all right, babe, I'm gonna go find a shipwreck. Let me get my sub.
I might want one of those subs, because if I said to you, dude, I got a sub, do you want to go find shipwrecks? You'd be remember, like, come on, let's fucking go.
Fuck yeah, dude, if you knew how to drive the sub. Do you remember Octopussy?
Of course, man. It's the best James Bond movie ever.
I don't know if it's the best James Bond movie ever.
When
That's
I was
kind
a kid,
sacrilege.
When
yes,
I was a kid,
yes.
When I was a kid, yep. That was the best James Bond
you know why?
Movie ever.
You know why, brother? Because we're close to the same age, and that movie came out, and we were of the age, because I remember it was one of my very first, I don't know if it was R, but one of my very first movies I attended where I needed a parent to go with me.
Yes.
And I didn't really know James Bond. I don't know how old I was, but I was of the age. It was when it was whatever year. Actually, Joelle, can you look for me? What year did For Your Eyes Only come out? Sorry.
Octopussy.
Sorry. I'm combining two things. I loved Octopussy, but the one I'm talking about is For Your Eyes Only, which was the first one I saw in the theaters. And it was right
did
around.
Did you ever see Never Say Never Again?
Not Say Never Again. Is that what it
never
is?
Never Say Never Again was the movie that wasn't officially a James Bond movie, but it was a James Bond movie. And it was after Sean Connery left. And he came back and played 007 one more time. And the movie was called Never Say Never Again.
Uh-huh. I know the title, but I don't know if I saw that one. My brother was obsessed with...
It was either Never Say Never or Never Say Never Again. One
right,
of those.
81. So that would made me six. That's insane to think that I was at 6 years old seeing For Your Eyes Only, but I guess I was.
When did Octopussy come out?
I just like saying Octopussy.
Working out.
Are you drinking?
That's my grandmother's favorite word, too.
What are you drinking, Donald?
Apple juice. I worked out heavy today.
I don't believe you're drinking apple juice. It's a little early for whiskey, no?
It's afternoon.
It's one. And by the way... What happened to our health kick? It's one, and COVID is retreating, and you gotta.
I
you
worked
gotta
out
give,
already.
You gotta
got
give
up,
up the
morning.
Fucking.
Hold on.
You gotta give up the Tuesday whiskeys, bro.
I got up early this.
That's
morning.
That's some COVID shit we're pulling out.
I got up early this morning. You drinking Red Bull?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You trying to get high too? You on the same shit? Don't even
I
try
am
it.
Fucking
though.
Drinking a one. Don't put that shit on me. You drinking
trying to
a
get
one
high
p.m.
Too?
Whiskey,
motherfucker. You trying to get high too?
I think yeah, Red Bull. Right. I think Red Bull's okay.
That's right. That's right. You trying to do it too? Don't trip.
This is my funny
anyway.
Juice.
Yeah, on. Exactly. This is my funny juice. Exactly. Exactly. But what were we talking about?
We were talking about how brilliant
Octopussy,
For Your Eyes Only
1983.
Is.
Oh, yeah. Octopussy. What year?
1983.
That's when I saw. That was. I think that's my first James Bond movie. And when I was a kid, I thought that was so dope. And then people were like, you should see Moonraker. And I watched Moonraker. Like, all of the Roger Moore movies were my introduction into
yeah,
James
well,
Bond.
Well, we didn't know as little kids that Roger Moore wasn't the jam until our senior people
was,
in our life were like, you
he
need
was
to know
the
about
second
Sean Connery.
Jam. He was the second jam. Sean Connery was the first jam. He was the second jam.
I think there was somebody in between them briefly.
Yeah. Yeah.
One movie.
One movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But the jam was those guys. I'll tell you this right now. I think Timothy Dalton did a great job as James Bond. I just think some of his movies weren't that good. I think Pierce Brosnan, before Remington, when Remington Steele was over, should have been James Bond. Or when Remington Steele was, after that 1 year and it wasn't really that dope and they didn't go, he should have been James Bond back then instead of being James Bond when he was an old man. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I think Daniel Craig, by far, has the best James Bond movies out of all of them.
Well, of course, now they're made with, like, you know, Sam Mendes with $1 zillion. I think they're really fucking great. But Sean Connery, dude, was the man. I mean, Sean, you can't compare anybody to Sean Connery.
Absolutely, but this was a different type of James. He was a different type of James Bond.
He
was very rough on the ladies. He was, you know what I mean? He was, you know, he was very abusive. When I say rough on the ladies, he would smack ladies around and shit.
What do you mean in his real life? Do you mean in the movies or in his real life?
He would do it. He did it
in
the movies too. In the movies too, buddy. In the movies too. My point is, I think Daniel Craig has the best ones. I would love it if James Bond is a number and a code name and not a person, and these aren't all the same dude, because I feel like we might have missed the boat already and this was a big deal, but I feel like Idris Elba would have been the best James, would have been a great James Bond, and that should have happened, and it didn't happen. And
well, why do you know that it won't happen in the future? He's not too old to play James Bond.
They've said pretty explicitly that they weren't going to do that.
Yeah.
Which was frustrating.
An African-American man?
Yeah. Yep. And then they said pretty specifically that they weren't going to do Idris, which was like, y'all are crazy.
You're bugging.
You make so much money.
You're bugging, dude. You want to talk about box office appeal to so many people. Mm. Idris is a great
example. Who'd have more fucking box office appeal than Idris Elba?
Who?
Donald motherfucking Faison.
No. I don't want to put... No. Come on. Let's be honest about everything. Come on, man.
You need to put that shit on your whiteboard. Fuck the Star Wars nonsense. You want to be James motherfucking Bond.
You got to be British to be James Bond.
James Adeyashun Bond.
Well, it would be dope if James Bond was a Nigerian that moved to... I mean, there's a lot of Nigerians in the UK, baby. I'm just putting it out there.
That's true.
A lot of West Africans out there, y'all. I'm just putting it out there. Keeping it 100.
Should we get into this, baby? Why don't we count in?
Okay, 5, 6, 7, 8.
Stories about a show we made. About a bunch of docs and nurses and a janitor who loved to hate. I said he's got stories that we all should know.
Funny episode.
Very fun. I cried at the end of this episode.
I was very moved. Yeah,
my wife cried at the end of this episode.
Oh, I'm clutching my pearls.
Who directed this, by the way?
Who do you think? Fucking Chris Koch. The Chris Koch. Fucking Mac Daddy.
Wow. He did such a great job. And who
Speaking
wrote this
of directing accolades, did you hear that I'm nominated for a Directors Guild of America Award?
Shut up. Congratulations.
You didn't hear?
No.
I did not hear about this through all of the emails and texts and stuff that I saw. I did not hear about this. Turn my key. Thunderous applause.
I got to tell you guys, to be sentimental for a second, I really, really, really was moved by this. For those of you not in the industry, the Directors Guild of America, the DGA, is the union for directors in both directing television and film. And not just the director as the leader of the film set, but all of the assistant directors that work with the director to execute everything. And so it is the ultimate version of an acknowledgement from your peers. So I certainly didn't think when I directed the second episode of Ted Lasso that it would have the reaction it did. And I just assumed, if they nominate Ted Lasso, they'll nominate the pilot because it's the first episode. But my episode sort of... kind of showed that the show would have some heart and emotion and drama and heartbreak. And I don't know. I was I was very truly shocked, but I haven't been able to wipe this smile off of my face. I'm so happy about it.
It's so amazing, buddy. It's so amazing, dude. The fact that your peers are the ones that nominated you too is really awesome, man.
And I got really awesome texts from directors I really love and just awesome support from the community. And I don't know. I'm just very proud. I'm so proud to be a member.
I always told you, buddy, you're a really good actor, but you know what you are. You know what you do best. You know where you shine best.
Where?
Is when you're directing, man.
Thank you.
You're very, very, very good at storytelling.
Thank you. Very
good at it. And writing, too. You shine there, too. You're very good at storytelling, man. And this is a fact. And I am so happy that the DGA has stepped up and said, you know what? Donald Faison is right. Jack Braff does tell great stories.
Thank you. You know what I mean? Thank you. Thank you. Well, it's all I truly ever wanted to be was a director. I'm so thrilled and blessed and grateful that I had this acting career, to be able to work as a director and let alone have the DGA say, hey, we chose 5 directors who we thought made the best comedy episodes this year, and you're one of them. That's just really fucking cool. And my younger me wouldn't even believe that it happened. So there you go.
There it is.
Fairy tales can come true. It could happen to you.
That's if you're young at heart.
I am young at heart.
Yeah, you are.
I don't look fucking about turn 46. Do I look that? No. I look like a kid.
You remember when Casey turned 30 when she was walking around telling everybody? When we went out
What did she say? I forgot.
She was like, I just turned 30 and I look like I'm 26, so I'm fine.
The show is very funny and very moving. And for those of you playing along at home, it's episode 412, My Best Moment. And, you know, the structure of this is a classic Bill Lawrence structure in which there's all these seeds laid through the episode about the theme being, what was your proudest moment as a doctor? Or what's one of your best memories? And we cut to lots of people's favorite memories. And then only to find in the end, when they save the day, that this saving of this one patient on Christmas has become their favorite moment, and they all tell it from a different perspective. And it was really moving. And, you know, just by the end, I had goosebumps all over my body. And Donald, you said you cried.
I cried. My wife cried. Like, I wasn't uncontrollably crying, but it was like, wow, I am fucking emotional right now because of this. And I think what helps is that it has so many funny moments in it.
Yes.
Like, even when we start off, JD carrying Turk and talking about, and Turk telling him about how he has to do surgery in front of the family members, and how you turned it into a movie where the white family isn't saying anything. They're just staring. But the black family is like, ooh, you going to find a tumor back there. I know you going to find a tumor. Oh, there's a tumor. And then we address
and
the
then family. You go, did you go to did you go to the black family watching a movie stereotype in your fantasy? And I'm like a bear to honey.
Yeah. All right. I'm going to say one thing.
What?
I've been to so many movie theaters before in my life. I'm a connoisseur of watching movies.
And you've also
been
to movie theaters like in Times Square, which is probably quite an experience.
And I grew up in Times Square. That's my actual neighborhood is Times Square, where I grew up.
Are you going to tell us that the stereotype has basis in reality or not?
No, it's real. It's true. It's definitely true. It's not a stereotype. This is fact.
I've honestly never
At least,
been...
oh, I take it back. It's fact for at least when I was growing up and experiencing going and seeing movies in African-American communities, like the Apollo Theater, like the Apollo Movie Theater in Harlem and all of these other. I went and saw School Days at the Apollo Movie Theater in Harlem. And let me tell you something right now. When they were doing the step shows, people jumped up from the audience and there was like this little stage on the side and we're doing step shows with School Days, the Spike Lee joint, by the way, y'all. We're doing the steps with the people in the movie with Lawrence Fishburne and Giancarlo Esposito and Tisha Campbell and Keim and all of these people doing it, you know what I mean? Doing it on screen and in the audience. It's an experience and it's a lot of fun. Right. And it's easy to make fun of.
But I have a question. Do you have to be in the mood for? I mean, I haven't had this experience. But I imagine if it was the right movie, I would be laughing my ass off at people participating in the audience. The wrong movie, I'd be so annoyed. I'd be like, please shut the fuck up.
Absolutely.
What, Joelle? What?
Go ahead.
I'm just saying it. Like, listen, if you're going to a certain movie theater where you know that's prominent, even if it's a movie where you shouldn't be doing that, I saw Precious on the south side of Chicago. That's not a movie where you're supposed to react. But when I tell you, like, the whole audience was like, we hear you, girl. Now run, run. Like, somebody brought Harold's Chicken in. And so when she goes to KFC, they were really mauling out. Like, also Dreamgirls, which is a movie you absolutely should react at. It was great. Like, people singing with Jennifer. It's a different way to watch a movie. So if you're in the mood, because, you know, I go to film festivals and stuff, and sometimes you're like, I just want to sit and, like, absorb this movie. This is a different form of entertainment. It's like you're there as much to see the movie as you are to see the audience. And that's what makes it, like, a fun experience.
I went and saw Back to the Future.
Yes!
And let me tell you something right now. I never laughed so hard at the commentating on how stupid right. George McFly is, dude. This is a guy who goes on to make millions of dollars after his son saves his freaking marriage. He goes on to make millions. I've never seen more people freaking laugh at his stupidity in my life. When freaking he can't put together what, when he finally puts together what the plan is between him and Marty and freaking what they're going to do to Lorraine at the dance. And he's like, you're going to go and you're going to touch her. You're going to touch her. And somebody in the audience finally yelled, her nipples, George! And the whole studio, the whole audience laughed so hard.
I imagine if the people yelling out shit are genuinely funny. I mean, it's just, I don't know. It's a bizarre, I mean, this is such a, like, an experience I've never had and I would like to have. But I imagine if the people who are yelling shit out are funny, then it would be a good time.
It's the best.
But you got to be the right movie, though. You got to pick the right movie.
It can be any movie. You just have to be in the movie.
Well, it can't be in a movie that, you know, a drama that you want to, like, get lost in.
Right. Don't go and watch a movie that.
Well, she said she watched Precious.
But that works, though. That works for that. That works, man. Think about it, man. Tyler Perry has made millions off of plays that really have great audience participation. It might not be them on the stage and stuff like that, but they feel like they're living what's going on stage, man. Mm-hmm. And he went and did it. And the way he did it was he took it to small venues where he could pack the audience with African-American church people, mm-hmm. and they can listen to, one, the gospel, two, so they're learning a lesson, two, they can listen to things that they, you know, they can experience situations that they can relate to. Mm-hmm. You don't get that when you go to the movies and you're black and you see all of these white movies, man. That's all that's out there, man. You don't get that shit in real life. But Tyler Perry provided that. Mm-hmm. And so because of that, that's why you have these Madea movies and stuff like that. Because we can relate to stuff like that. He started something and we were like, oh, shit, that's funny. Yeah. Now. I want to be as rich as Tyler Perry. Okay. I wish I would have gotten on board back in the day. I'm sorry I didn't.
Got on board kudos, with what?
I wish being, I would have not being in this stuff, I mean, but I wish I would.
He's a zillionaire because not only is he
I wish I would have seen his vision. He's employed. Absolutely. He's employed so many African-American actors. It's ridiculous how many he's employed. Like, he's employed more than Hollywood has, I'd say, by now. You know what I mean? He's put so many people into great positions, and now some of them are movie stars. Real talk. Mm-hmm. Real talk. Am I wrong?
No, where's I just the can't lie? Fit a word in edgewise.
Where's the lie? I know, because I'm so passionate about this nowadays.
I know. I never knew
the lie?
That whiskey, though. I never knew you were so passionate about Mr. Perry.
I appreciate what he's done as an African American actor and not being able to see all, you know what I mean?
Like, yeah, I hear you.
Not being able to see people like me in movies growing up. I appreciate him.
I agree. Absolutely. And I think he's a very inspirational story because, you know, everyone was passing on his shit. No one wanted to make it. No one would give him a dime. And he built a fucking empire on his own. And now has his own studio and backlot and he's just incredible inspiration.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
All right, let's get back to the episode.
It's crazy how this all stemmed from African-American people in movie theaters, man.
I know. Just put it out. Listen, everyone admires how on topic we stay. I laughed when I'm lecturing these med students and you think I'm giving them medical advice, but no, I'm just telling about which product of hair mousse I use.
Yeah, I wrote that down. Ruben with your JD Ruben, special hair.
Yeah, and then they cut to gel. Ruben, and I toss him the gel or whatever it is, and when they cut back to him, his hair is just perfect like mine. All like
it starts off, he needs a haircut real bad. I didn't know the gel trimmed it down to the perfect height and everything.
I didn't know the gel miraculously also gave him a haircut, but we'll take it.
This is the we should mention that this is the Christmas episode also.
Yes, it is a Christmas episode and has a very warm Christmas message at the end. What is this bragging about having sex with a grandma? Oh, so then there's this flashback where there's like a gilf, a hot grandma.
She's
a
gilf. Yes.
Well, yeah, that would be a gilf.
Yeah, so there's this gilf, and JD is bragging that he delivered a baby, but it's actually Mickhead who did the delivery.
Yeah, no, it was his best moment. That
what
was
are you
question.
Laughing at, Dale? You never heard gilf before?
No, it's just funny. Yes, a gilf. Course.
There
yes.
are a lot of young gilfs out there.
I don't think I've ever encountered a gilf, but maybe I have.
I've met several young gilfs. I've met women who had kids at a young age, or had a kid at a young age, and then their kid had a kid at a young age, and that made them a gilf. Because when you look at them, you were like, "Oh snap, you a grandma?"
Right. I'm sure there's plenty of gilfs. I'm sure there's plenty of gilfs. I just don't know that I've met a gilf yet.
Oh, my God.
I'd hit.
Really? So you've encountered gilfs?
Absolutely, yes.
Okay. All right. I can't wait.
Have you,
wait.
Daniel? Daniel, have you encountered a gilf?
Well, yeah, I've encountered a gilf or two.
Yeah, see,
no, you've never encountered a gilf, Daniel.
Look, there are beautiful women all around the world.
I don't say they're not beautiful. A gilf means you want to have sex with that woman. You desire her sexually, and she's a grandma. That has not happened to me yet. I'm sure it will. I look forward to it.
I look forward to it for you
right
as well.
Now, there are a lot of young women out there who are grandmas. Just put it out there. A gilf doesn't have to be. Look. Let's put it this way.
It's not saying that's a beautiful woman. It's saying I want to put my penis in her.
I don't want to put my penis in.
That's what fucking gilf stands for, ass neck.
I thought it dick lick. Hold on, dick lick.
Dick lick.
Hold on, dick lick.
Oh no.
The ILF is
you calm like down too. All right.
Gilf is not, oh, what a pretty older woman. Gilf is I want to lay my peep beside her.
But beside her.
I want to drape my peep on her.
In her. It has to be in.
Oh, I didn't know the in part. That's new. Let me write that down.
My.
I don't. Okay, I take that back. I have
Let's
not
get
met
off
a,
this topic.
I have not met a gilf.
Yeah, I didn't think you met a gilf.
I have not met a gilf. I take it back.
Oh, yeah, hey, listen, we're 46. We're probably going to meet some gilfs along the way, but I haven't yet.
I have yet to meet a gilf. I take it back. I thought we were talking about hot grandmas. That's what I thought we were talking about.
All right. Let's get back on topic here.
We're still on the same. We're on the right topic. This has everything to do with the show. JD had sex.
Oh, yeah. And then I do sort of a victory punch. I don't know what that was about. Did you see that? I did a little like, yeah. Oh, I know what it is. It's a gif that I've seen. I'm at the lectern and the gif of me doing sort of like a victory punch. I've seen that before. So that's why I wanted to point it out.
I don't think that's the first time. I don't think that's the last time you do that either, though.
No, but I mean, that particular one, I think there's like Christmas decorations, and I'm standing at a lectern. I've seen that one before. It's like a good gif if you need to say, like,
you
yes.
are using lectern really well. I just want to put it out there.
Word lectern. Do you remember in your school, Dale, you like, maybe you were a theater techie geek like I was, but your school would have that thing, right? It was a speaker on a cart, and then this part would flip down to make a lectern, and it had a mic. And I was on the AV. This is how fucking dorky I was, you guys. I was so proud to be on the AV squad. Now, you might be like, what's an AV squad? Do you remember when someone really fucking cool would roll into your classroom, like a film strip or one of those machines that would go beep and you'd change the fucking slide? Or even, you know, a TV with a VCR. Remember these people?
Oh, yeah.
That was me. I was part of the AV team.
So cool.
My hero.
That's how badly I wanted to be in film. I was like, oh, so I get to look like fucking Fonzie wheeling this projector into the classroom. The girls are going to think I'm so cute as I...
I thought it was just because you wanted to get out of class. Shit,
no. This was not.
As a
dude, I thought I thought when I was setting up a bit of AV gear that I looked really cool.
I figure if you said I'm on the AV squad, you could use it to get out of class a couple of times. Like if your teacher was ever like, Mr. Braff, you missed class. You could be like, well, oh, Mr. Patterson, I had an AV assignment I had to take care of in such and such's class in gym. And you could lie, and it would take a while for that lie to catch
up to you. You're describing a different child. I'm telling you that I was like, look how fucking cool I'm going to look wheeling in this VCR.
You are absolutely right. You were a dork. You were a dork.
Yes, but it's a specific type of dork. It's like because I wasn't like a calculus dork. I was a fucking like theater techie geek dork.
But that's a good dork. Okay, that's a good dork.
I remember, I'll tell you even one more level. I've never even told anyone this story, and maybe it's not even interesting anymore. But do you remember the old school giant, like public school lighting boards? They weren't, you know, nowadays they're all computers. But like, you know, the giant levers. And I just thought that was the coolest fucking thing I'd ever seen. And I would sneak into the theater. Like some kids are cutting class to go smoke cigarettes behind the fucking school. I would sneak in the theater, and when no one's looking, play with the giant levers.
Yeah,
on
with the fucking levers thing. Yeah. Dude, you did that too.
I was the like,
best. Yes.
I was like, I bring this giant lever up, and all the lights come up on the stage. Like, is this a career path? Can I have this as my job?
Yo, at William J. O'Shea, IS-44. That was the only place where I've ever experienced an auditorium. After that, I was in private school, and the gym was the auditorium.
Right.
This was the only time in public school, IS-44 in New York City on 77th Street in Amsterdam. I used to sneak into the freaking auditorium behind the stage and fuck with the big ass. But they were only on the stage. There were none in the audience because the freaking auditorium was so big, right? The freaking thing is so big. So there's the projector at the top and of the big light, the spotlight at the top, and that's it. That one person got to operate. And then there were all of these set lights that you could freaking push
different
up
colors.
I remember this. Oh my God.
There'd be a lever that was like a full stage wash of blue, and I would just be like, is this
might be the one thing that we have in common. From high school. I mean, from junior high. I did it in junior high school. This might be the one thing that we have in common.
So funny. I've never told the story, and it's hilarious that you were doing the same thing. But while other kids were, like, cutting class to go do, like, real, like, trouble, like, get into trouble, I was, like, sneaking into the theater to play with the theater lights.
Dude, I was doing...
I was like, I hope I don't get caught turning on the blue.
The fact that we've never had this conversation before either, I did it as a kid because my parents were a part of a theater, the National Black Theater, right? Yeah. And they had this whole lighting system there too. And I used to sit in the freaking booth and watch the light guy do the light cues and stuff like that. And there were times where I would have to be the light cue guy because, like, you know, there would be like they would do stand-up nights. So like the Uptown Comedy Club, all of these things that made it to television started at my theater that my parents were a part of when I was growing up. And so I remember having to do the lights there. And so when I went to school at a very young age, I thought, I'm so fucking dope because I can do the lights at the theater. I can do this shit at the school too.
But you were enjoying being a light board operator too. Oh, absolutely.
That's the best. It's
you
like
missed out on the thrill of wheeling in a projector, bro.
I didn't want to do that. But it looks like the things look like you're pushing the Millennium Falcon into light speed.
That's why you liked it. Now we're finally. I was waiting for this to circle around to something Star Wars. The light board handles reminded you of the Millennium Falcon.
It did. I do remember that. That was really cool, man.
You know, it's funny. Nowadays, you know, theater lighting is all programmed into a computer, and literally someone just sits there and hits a button because it's all been programmed. And that's fine. It's 2021. But there was such an art to doing it back in the day when you were literally adjusting different things live on the fly. And it was kind of like, I imagine being a DJ in a sense, that you had to be like, at the right moment, this had to happen. Then you had to not forget to do that. And like, it was, I don't know. I fucking loved it. Anyway, we're going to go to break and we will talk more about the television show Scrubs when we come right back. Scrubs, rewatch show with Zach and Bo.
we're back.
And we're back. Todd's, I think Todd's storyline, I think his is the best one. I think him and Cox have the best one.
Yes. So Todd Miracle Fives a patient back to life.
Yes. In his mind, he does. Or he thinks.
Well,
he
is it his mind or is it real? See, one thing I don't understand about all these memories everyone's having is like they're supposedly real stories.
Yes. It happened.
Like Sarah rides a pony to work and it's not a fantasy.
That's not a fantasy. That was very weird too.
Thunder.
Like they walk into Sacred Heart Hospital.
Yeah,
front door.
But yeah, she's not even tying off the pony outside at the ranch. She's riding it inside.
She's gonna ride it all the way to ICU because she has to do rounds.
What is her plan with this pony when she gets to work? I don't understand.
I guess she's going to do rounds with the pony.
I had a little trouble with the fact that both Todd high-fived someone back to life and Sarah rode a pony to work as part of her commute, and they were not fantasies.
Yeah. Yeah. But everybody's
fantasy. But Todd's was funny. Todd's was very funny, man.
Yeah. But everybody's fantasy was kind of like, what was Kelso's fantasy?
He's on the vacation. By the way, you know, it's a funny little tidbit, you know, so sometimes when you're an actor, you're doing a scene, they'll just be like, all right, before the lines, just, we need you guys to chatter. You know, you're just shooting the shit and wait till the camera lands and then we'll get into the scene. So Ken in this moment is just chatting up some beautiful ladies because he's at a retreat for Plomox, the pharmaceutical company. And what you hear Ken, I'm assuming improv to these two women is, well, I can't do this all on my own.
Really? Is that what
he said? Did you notice that?
I didn't notice that. Yeah. He couldn't. And there was three of them too. He could have called somebody.
No, but I mean,
somebody.
He says the fucking theme song.
Yeah. No. I get what he says, but it's appropriate because he's saying, I can't do the three of you ladies this old man can't do the three of you ladies on his own.
Oh, I didn't even think of that. I just thought of it as like, I don't know if Bill or someone said, you know, add this line or what, but it's of all things that he's flirting with, he's using the pickup line, I can't do this all on my own.
Because he knows where it's going.
Well, that was very funny. And I love the running gag of Plomox being like the evil pharmaceutical company that's just sending, as they do, sending doctors on trips to the Caribbean.
I laughed at Elliot being scared of tiny hands.
That was very funny. That shot of her looking down at the tiny hand.
That made me laugh really hard.
What about Deontay with his dreads?
I didn't see Deontay. Is that who?
Oh, yeah. Deontay, Donald stand-in / our friend, always makes cameos here and there. And he was an orderly with newly discovered beautiful dreads.
Oh, good for him.
What about the flashback? One of the funniest LOLs in the episode is...
Are you getting mono? Jamie
getting
mono?
Yeah. It was so well done. It looks like Super 8 film. And it's like you're panning around the room. You're panning around the room and everyone's making out. And then you get to the couch and I'm sitting there with the most glorious mullet. And this girl turns from her man that she's making, boy that she's making out with, and just sneezes in my face. And then goes back to making out. And someone's like, Mono, I thought the only way to get that was from kissing. And they show the fantasy and they cut back. And I go, no, there are other ways.
This will pay dividends when JD has a child with Elizabeth Banks in the future. This joke comes back around. I want to talk about something else.
You mean because of, fire, friendly, well, no, there was.
Let's just say there was, I don't remember. It'll come back.
There was fire in the
outer. In the general area. The
outer regions or something.
Yeah.
That speech is fucking hilarious. I remember laughing so hard trying to
deliver the line. I remember that.
And I think I'm saying it to you and Judy, right? And you're both cracking up.
It's all three of us. It's all three of us.
And you guys are like,
Yeah.
Oh, you did. You said you didn't do the such
and such. And you're like, are you telling me that you got her pregnant and you never had intercourse?
Yeah, something like that. This is something I want to talk about. This joke didn't make sense, and this is the first time it's ever happened. Elliot asks Laverne what are you doing this weekend? And Laverne says, minding my own business.
Yeah.
How about you? She wasn't really minding her business if she asks, what if Elliot's doing? What's Elliot doing?
I think she might be overthinking it. I think she's just being classic Laverne sassy.
But why did she? Okay. I'm just saying.
Minding my own business.
If you minding your own business, you know what you do after that? You keep it moving. Real talk.
Laverne is mean sometimes.
Yeah.
Elliot was just being friendly.
But so was she. She wound up, it was clear that Laverne, that's just her thing, and that's how she is with her friends. Yeah.
Unless I'm going to see my nephew play Pippin.
Well, who's he playing in Pippin?
Pippin. But I'm not even doing it right, because you got to have the face of like, how dare you even ask? You think my nephew is in the ensemble?
Right.
He's Pippin, motherfucker. He's Pippin. That was one of my favorite Aloma reads, that she just goes, Pippin. Wait, I want to tell you
how. What about the first?
Oh, this is the big one. This is the inaugural. It's Beard Fosse.
We hadn't said Beard Face yet either, though.
I know. Is this his first line, Beard Fosse?
This is his first line. Yeah. This is the first time we ever addressed that there's a character named Beard Face.
Yes. And then he says, no, it's pronounced Beard Fosse.
And then for the rest of the show, we call him Beard Face.
It's the stupidest / funniest joke. Now, I think we've settled in that Beard Fosse may be... I've had some feedback from people on my Instagram account, because I've been really troubled by the fact that Beard Fosse is so often in the pharmacy. And someone commented that an anesthesiologist might often be in the pharmacy, but also in and around all the other many rooms of the hospital. So, okay. And then when I saw Beard Fosse in your room, I thought, oh, maybe he's an anesthesiologist.
Okay. Well, I want to say this then, if we're going to talk about Beard Fosse.
Go.
We once had a trivia conversation, or not a trivia, but we were wondering what Beard Fosse was in, and I thought it was a James Bond movie.
No, I
and
know what
you,
it is.
And it turned out to be
a Fincher movie.
A Fincher
girl
movie.
With the Girl with the Dragon Tattoo.
That still starred the star of James Bond.
Yes. Oh, you're bringing it around in the initial conversation?
Absolutely. And
it all comes back to Daniel Craig.
It all comes back to Daniel Craig.
I wonder if Beard Fosse got to hang out with Daniel Craig, or if he was just like too shy to approach him on the. I remember exactly where it was too. It's on a plane.
I don't think Beard Fosse is that shy in real life. Like
I remember he was a gregarious fellow. He, I remember he was a very good artist. He was a cartoonist.
Okay.
He would draw. I believe he had this thing. I think it was where he would draw cats in cartoons. And he would call it cartoons instead of cartoons.
Oh, wow. You know, I
they were good, too. Like, he was a good artist. He is a good artist.
I still every now and then talk to Mickhead, mm-hmm. Frank.
You should ask him about Beard Fosse.
He talks about Beard Fosse. Beard Fosse has all of, like, he listens to the show. And it would be a great pleasure to have him, Frank.
Yes. Snoop Dogg.
Snoop Dogg, Manly. I think we should have them on the show.
Can you organize that, please? We've been talking about that. Could be not an episode. It'll be a conversation with background performers who became foreground performers on the show Scrubs, and we'll get like the three or four that
the core
Deontay, Manly, who was Snoop Dogg, Beard Fosse, whose name I forgot. I'm so sorry. And
we should Frank. Try to get. We should try to get. We should try to get, I'll talk to Frank, but we should really try to talk to Katia, Renee, Rabideau, and Deontay also, because they lived the exact same lives that we did, but it never got filmed. They did the exact
those
same
were all
things.
Our, just to remind everyone, those were the stand-ins that the four of us had, and we spent
they
a
would
lot
have
of time
to,
with them.
They would have to do all of the walk and talks and everything that we did, but it never got put onto film in any way. So
and they were awesome, and they were an awesome group, because we spent all the time with them, and we had so many fucking great laughs with those people.
Yes, I think that would be really awesome.
All right, well, that's another show.
Yeah.
We could do an episode that's like a conversation with our stand-ins, and we can bring in, like you said, Renee, Katya, Scott Rabideau.
And if they Deontay. Turn out to be and if they turn out to be duds, then we'd never air them. It's that simple. It's that simple.
They won't be duds. They're funny. I remember laughing our asses off with those guys.
Yeah, I always laugh with Deontay. I laugh a lot with Frank too.
How about how JD comes into the ICU with an ice cream cone? like what doctor is coming into the ICU with an ice cream cone? And then when someone's like, "Oh, give me," oh, I think it's Judy. She's like, "Oh, you brought that for the little boy?" And I'm like, "Yeah, sure." And I give it to him, and I go, "It's a waffle cone." so forlorn that I've given away my fucking waffle cone to a child.
And what's really crazy is that JD's not sympathetic about it either. After he watched the kid come in with his dad, who's sick, you know,
the kid probably gave me the idea that I wanted an ice cream cone.
That you wanted the ice cream,
and then I come into the room all cocky, like I got my ice cream cone. And Judy's like, Carla's like, "Oh, that's so sweet, you got him an ice cream cone." I'm like, "Yeah, it's a waffle cone." Like it's almost to say, like I spent extra money. I spent a little extra money for that waffle cone. That was plus 50 cents for that waffle cone.
Oh, boy.
All right.
What else we got?
We got stealing the old woman's dentures and wearing them around my neck.
That's gross, dude. That's
so gross.
That's gross, dude.
Now, this weird gum thing. I give you her gum. I read on Scrubs Wiki that there's, I guess there's a deleted scene where the gum has a totally different storyline. Like I thought it was something else and it turns out to be bad tasting gum. And then, I don't know, we changed what the gum was about in post-production, I think.
Oh, well, that was 'cause
you noticed that the gum has Asian writing on it.
Yeah, I did see that.
Apparently there's a deleted scene on one of the DVDs, which we should get into those too. How funny would it be to look at that shit? Wait, Joelle, we should have an episode called Zach and Donald Look at Deleted Scenes.
Okay, I love it.
I have
here we go. Wait, hold on. Let me just tell you what this says here. The denture gum that JD tries to tempt Turk with has Chinese writing on it. This is explained in a deleted scene available on the DVD, which shows that it was originally intended to be what JD thought was eggnog gum. Remember, it's Christmas. And he bought it in Chinatown, only to realize that it was, in fact, egg gum.
That's hilarious. I wonder why it didn't fly.
I don't know, but
I want to ask this question to the three of you.
Go ahead.
Because we never meet this character, but this character is always talked about. Kelso's son.
Yeah, he's definitely an out gay man.
Who could have played Kelso's son? Ooh. If you had to choose.
Andrew Reynolds.
Who's Andrew Reynolds?
Oh, Andrew Reynolds. You know Andrew Reynolds. Skateboarder? Am I saying his name right? He was the star of Book of Mormon, which broke him. He's in The Prom recently.
I know who you're talking about now. I don't know.
Do you want me to show you his picture?
I know who you're talking about. I don't know his name, though.
Let me show you his picture. He's very talented.
He was on Girls. Funny. He was in Girls.
Yes, he was on Girls. This guy.
Yeah, I know exactly. His name's Andrew Reynolds.
Yeah.
Oh, Reynolds. Andrew Reynolds.
Reynolds, yeah.
Sorry. I heard
I first saw him in Book of Mormon on Broadway with Josh Gad. And
you took me to see that show.
I did?
Yeah, you took me.
That was the funniest shit I've ever seen in my life. And then this guy, Andrew Reynolds, who I know a little bit and is a sweetheart, has the sickest voice and is so talented. And, you know, I just think he's so talented. That was the first person that came to mind.
We flew to New York because you were like, we got to see, you were there already. And you were like, fly to New York. I got tickets for this play. I flew to New York with Casey. This is back when we were making money. I flew to New York with Casey to watch Book of Mormon with you. And we had a night out on the town after and everything like that. Mm-hmm. And I think it was like theater appreciation week and everybody was trying to raise money. And so at the end of the show, after the bow, Josh Gad, this was my first time being like,
let me stop you. Not theater appreciation. They do this campaign for AIDS.
Okay, thank you.
They fundraise money for AIDS. And it's a certain time every year, the theater community, after the bow, all the shows compete who can raise the most money for this AIDS charity. And they stop after the bow and say, okay, we're going to come around with buckets. This is for a great cause. We want to win. That's that. All right, sorry.
This is my first experience of how cool of a person Josh Gad was. In front of the whole theater, he campaigns for the money. And he did it in such a great way. After this really freaking funny show, he did it in such a great way that I wanted to give money to the cause. And so when he did Wish I Was Here, my first time meeting Josh, that was the one thing I could think about was, wow, this dude knows how to command a room.
Yeah.
And I just remember going to see that play with you because you were like, you have to see this play. It's so good. And it was life-changing, man. It was one of those things where I was like, Broadway can do that? I didn't know that Broadway could be that because they do some outrageous stuff. Have you guys seen the Book of Mormon, Daniel?
Yes.
Joelle?
Yeah.
Did you see it with Josh Gad and Andrew?
No.
It was so good.
No. Unfortunately not.
I laughed my ass off on that show.
Dude, let me tell you something. It's rare that you do this. I can name the shows where I went out and bought the soundtrack right after. Five Guys Named Mo. Mm-hmm. The Book of Mormon. And that's it. Those are really the only ones that I've ever done it with. Five Guys Named Mo and the Book of Mormon. And Serafina. When I saw Serafina, I went and bought
Serafina, Chakachaway.
And so those are the three. Can you remember yours? Or did you buy all of them? And I bought the Moulin Rouge right after we saw the Moulin Rouge.
Ooh.
When we went and saw the Moulin Rouge, I went and bought that new one too. Ooh. That shit is fire, dude. That shit is fire. Listen. For all
You're talking about the theater soundtrack?
Yeah, when me and you went and saw...
This wasn't too long ago.
Yeah,
this was slow.
I went and bought that the next day. I bought it because of my favorite number. There's two numbers in it that I love. One, freaking Chandelier.
Yeah.
And two, Royals. Oh, the two best performances in the show, my opinion.
Yeah. Oof. That was a great show. I think that might survive COVID.
A lot of people from that show got COVID.
Did they?
Yes.
Well, I'm really hoping that when Broadway comes back, I'm hoping that some of those big shows are able to survive. You know, a handful of them just had to close, and I'm hoping that some of those ones like that one are able to survive.
It would be great if Broadway can come back stronger.
Yes, we all miss it. Those of us who love it miss it, and maybe we'll need to support it more than ever. If you're a theater lover, in order to help resuscitate this precious industry, we're all going to have to go see lots of plays, which I will do. I wanted to say I got full body goosebumps it's embarrassing that I gave myself goosebumps, but I did. When my character right before the commercial break goes, "Why are you sick?" There was just something about it that was goosebumpy.
That's good.
The mystery of these people who have such good intentions, who are just sitting there trying to solve the mystery.
I have another
all of these amazing real life heroes do every day. And I don't know. I found I was moved by myself.
I have a question.
Go.
Did you remember this episode?
Anything
in this episode at all? Did you remember anything in this episode at all?
Not much, no.
I didn't remember 1 ounce of this episode. Not an ounce, not even a smidgen of it. And that's why I think like I thought we didn't do any more themed episodes like Christmas or the Thanksgiving or those type of episodes anymore after the third season.
Yeah, I don't really remember. I think I remember the weird lady with her dentures of staring at me through the Venetian blinds.
I didn't remember any of it. And I think that's why I was so moved at the end, because it caught me off guard.
Let's talk about how fucking funny it is when Sarah slams the door on the crying med student.
Yeah. I laughed out loud.
Me too.
She's
giving the little kid a tour, and she's like, "I used to hide in here." And she opens it up to reveal like the brand new med student crying because he's watched a death or something.
She's like, hang in there.
And then she like slams the door closed. She's like, "Suck it up.
I'm trying."
And then that funny sequence where Cox's favorite memory is the double Heimlich.
Yeah, that's that. Like I said, the Todd and Cox have the two best. The double Heimlich is pretty awesome.
And you know, the first
Heimlich
was
missing the jump shot.
Yeah, you know who the first Heimlich was? That Jared. Yeah,
it was Jared.
Was one of our PAs, office PAs, I believe, was his job at first. He probably got promoted.
I think he's an executive now, or he produces shows.
Sure he does. But back in the day, he started as an office PA and then worked his way up. But that's the guy Cox's first Heimliching. Then the gum goes into, is it gum?
Yeah, it was gum.
Goes into jumps from his mouth to another random woman's mouth. Then he runs over and gives her the Heimlich maneuver. And then that goes into the garbage can.
Swish into the basket over the garbage can, which he's missing when he's shooting it with his hands. He's missing with the paper, but he does it with the Heimlich maneuver and the gum.
How about when fucking Sarah is talking to you in French and you go, and your French is, I have an Eiffel Tower in my pants.
Yeah.
Then she goes, she says something else and you just go, pamplemousse.
Pamplemousse, grapefruit.
Yeah.
Grapefruit.
That's all you know is I have an Eiffel Tower in my pants and grapefruit.
That was very funny. And then Kelso with a heart. Kelso has a heart.
One of the first times Kelso has a heart.
Not only that, it was so offsetting that even Kelso has to comment. It's, you know, the person that he's talking to
is like,
is this really Dr. Kelso? He goes, yes, it's really Dr. Kelso.
Yeah. That little kid warms his heart and he decides to let his father stay in the hospital even though he doesn't have insurance.
Well, his kid reminds him how much he loves his son too. You know,
yes.
He loves his gay son.
Yeah.
As much as he makes fun of his son.
Yeah. As much as he makes fun of him, the little boy reminds him of the goodness. Mm-hmm. Look at that face of my little puppy.
He's so cute.
All right, we're going to go to break, and then we're going to have a guest. We'll be right back. And we're back.
And we are back.
I'm excited.
With you at Fake Doctors, Real Friends. Let's welcome Natalia Ortiz.
Medaglia. That's definitely not her name.
Medaglia. Let's welcome Natalia Ortiz. Medaglia.
Ortiz Medaglia.
Ortiz. What is it?
Ortiz.
Natalia.
Okay, we get it.
Ortiz Natalia.
All right. Nice. How are you, Natalia? Welcome to the program.
Thank you, guys. Thank you, Joel, for picking me this week. Thank you.
You made it. By the way, Joel, has there been any incoming mail so far to the Date Joel Monique Gmail?
Yeah, there's a couple of letters in there. I haven't opened them yet, so I don't know the content. Right, well,
You're eyeing them, Joel. You're just eyeing them right now.
Well, listen, I want to remind everyone on the live show, which is going to happen March 26th. Right, Joel? That's the date?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. March 26th. And we are going to have a segment called I Want to Date Joel Monique. And if you'd like to apply to be one of Joel's suitors, you send an email to datejoellemonique@gmail.com.
That is correct.
And her name is spelled JoelleMonique. So slide into her email and write a very romantic and appropriate message, and maybe you'll be selected to be one of the candidates on Date Joel Monique.
But enough of that, Zach. Let's get to Natalia.
Okay, Natalia, how are you? Welcome.
Good, Joel. I actually might have someone for you. He's my...
Oh, my goodness.
I'm sorry. I gotta put his hat in the ring because he's just like the most awesome human being in the world. He loves Star Wars.
I love it.
We have like movie quote, like, you know, trivia.
Natalia, how does he feel about jazz cabbage?
Does he smoke that shit?
He does.
Oh, Joel. Love it first inhale.
We've set the bar so low. Do you smoke weed or do you like Star Wars?
Game over.
Well, I'm sorry, but...
That'll get you the first date.
Listen, you got to have some common
interests. There's levels to this. There's levels.
We got to have common interests. The guy's got to love puppies, Star Wars, and weed, or this is just a non-starter. So we just need to know the basics. And Natalia, you're saying you may have a candidate. Well, let's get him. Let's get him into the website. I mean, let's get him into the email box.
I'm gonna give him the email address.
All right, good. Definitely. All right, Natalia, do you have a question for us? Go ahead.
I do. I actually have a couple of questions.
Well, you get to pick one. You get to pick one question.
Okay. We'll see.
You don't agree. I'm of the school, just audience, that that we should. The calls are getting. No offense to you, Natalia. This is before we met you. The calls are getting a smidgen long, and we should do one question. And Donald might be on the fence and say, no, I prefer the two-question thing. Right, Donald?
Yeah.
Well, we'll let the audience decide. If the audience says, you know what, guys? You fucked the whole show up. Go back to two questions, we will. But Natalia, you're going to be our pilot program of one question.
You're going to get two.
Okay. All right. So I guess I'll go with the most important one. So
yes.
I love film since I was 8 years old. I've been actually studying it since I was 8. So like I've studied Steven Spielberg, Kubrick, and like all these other directors. And I just have a question for you, Zach. How did you, like when you first started directing, did you have like insecurities about it? Like when you started, you know, when you directed Scrubs, were you like, oh, even though I know these people, I'm a little bit, you know, scared about it.
I have insecurities when I direct now, and I've been doing it for a long time.
How do you overcome that?
Well, you the way I overcome it is being super prepared, being the most prepared person on the set. I have to know more about the script I'm making than anybody else that's there. And also having the humility to know that you're not always going to know the answer, that you surround yourself with a team of people that are your brain trust that you can rely on. I can't do this all on my own, right? So it's about bringing on a cinematographer who knows way more about photography than you do, and bringing on an actor or an actress who knows way more about acting than you do. Surrounding yourself with amazing people. And they're your support system. You're like, not every shot will be amazing, but I can't fail with this cinematographer. Look at his or her work. It's amazing. This actress, oh my gosh, she's incredible. If she's saying these words. So what you do is you get the best team together that you possibly can. And this could go for a big ass movie or a little short that you're going to make, with your friends as you build your reel and your resume. It's about bringing on a group of people that will support you in a positive way. And this goes for, you know, obviously any endeavor people take on. It doesn't have to do with just filmmaking. But if you're going to be the leader, I would say getting to know the material as well as you possibly can. And then having the humility to, when a question comes up, turning to your team and going, I don't know. Does anyone else have ideas? And let's all brainstorm together. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I got it. Yeah.
But insecurity doesn't go away. You know, I'm telling you, like, you're always going to, I said the other day, and it's true. I get nervous when I'm dialing in to do this podcast. Because I want to do a good job. I want the show to be fun. I want everyone to enjoy it who's listening all around the world. But then you sort of, you channel it. You just step up and do it. And
I'm willing to bet that LeBron James, before he plays basketball, still gets nervous.
Yeah,
I'm willing to bet anybody. I'm willing to bet any surgeon before they go into surgery, even though they've done it several times, still gets a bit nervous. You know, I think that's a part of, you know, who we are as humans. I think that's, you know, the fear of failure or the fear of success can be debilitating sometimes.
And the fear of the unknown, you know?
Well, yeah, the fear of the unknown can be debilitating sometimes. And it's up to you, Natalia, to say, yo, you know what? I'm going to step up and I'm going to conquer this. Whether I fail or succeed, I'm still going to give my best. Zach's way of doing it is perfect. I'm going to prepare. I'm going to prepare as much as I possibly can. Not only am I going to prepare, when I get there, I'm going to be willing to accept more information so that I can get the best from everybody.
Yeah.
That's a big thing to do. A lot of people can't do that. A lot of people feel like because I'm the director, I'm the boss, and therefore it's my way or the highway.
Yeah.
Never works.
I don't find that's a very effective way to
it to never either. Really and, works and, well and, that way.
Inspire people. You know, as a director, I think one of the main jobs you have is inspiring people to do their best work. You know, you don't want a set of people phoning it in like, oh, I got to fucking work on Natalia's movie this weekend. You want a group of people that are like, oh, shit, did you read Natalia's script? It's really good. Yeah. Oh, where are we shooting? We're going to shoot on that bridge. Oh, that's going to be so fucking cool. You want to surround yourself with people that are as stoked as you are. Now, when you're starting out and you're working on smaller projects, that will be your friends and your classmates and whoever else is in your. And as you get into the professional world, you don't want to just hire anybody. You want to hire people that really are believe in your project and are stoked about it. It doesn't feel like just a check to them. Of course, the check's important, but they're passionate about it and they want to do their best. They're inspired to do their best. And one of the main jobs of a filmmaker is to inspire everybody, is to get everyone riled up and be a cheerleader.
I get what you mean. I work as like a freelance assistant director and also like a COVID compliance officer. And I've seen so many times like the director kind of like yell at the AD or yell at me, you know, and it's just like, you know, I take it as like, okay, he's stressed out. So I already know my job is to like kind of cool him down. Mm. But I mean, I don't want to say it's unpleasant to work there because like, I understand that like the amount of work that carries on to them. You know, but it's also like sometimes it's like, oh my God, I have to go into this guy's.
Well, one of the best things,
you know, yelling fit.
Natalia, one of the best things I can say that you're already doing that I recommend to anyone that wants to be a filmmaker is as soon and as early as you can work on sets in whatever capacity. You know, you're working as a COVID compliance person. I've told everyone on the here before, I was a PA on music videos and commercials. And the best education, you know, 4 years at Northwestern Film School didn't teach me anything compared to what I learned peeing on music videos at the end of the 90s in Manhattan for like 24-hour shifts. Mm. That's the education. So I think, Natalia, since you're an aspiring filmmaker, one of the things that's going to happen is when you're on these sets, as it happened with Donald and I on Scrubs, I would go, oh, I don't really like the way that person's talking to the crew. I'm not going to be like that. I don't really like the way that producer is dealing with everyone. When it's my set, that shit's not going to happen.
Right.
So you're digesting all of this stuff. And, you know, on Scrubs, it was amazing. We had a different director every week. So I would be like, ooh, I love this director. I learned so much from him. Ooh, this director, I don't like the way he talks to the actors. I don't like the way he talks to the DP. I'm not going to be like that. So it was all learning, and digesting.
Right. Yeah, definitely. That helps a lot. Thank you.
So look at it. Even you're welcome. And even when you have a shitty day and someone's being a jerk, just kind of, I mean, obviously if it's crosses a line, you fucking report them to HR. But as long as it's like just somebody being a jerk on set, in a normal way, people are jerks at any job. You know, just look at it like, I'm learning, I'm digesting. That's not the way I'm going to do it when I'm running my own sets. You know, just look at everything as a learning experience.
Well, I graduated last year in May. Like I had a COVID graduation, and like, you know, even before like working on my little student films, I saw the way that people were, you know, the way the personalities and the way that they were, and like I'm like, okay, I have to kind of learn how to deal with these personalities, you know. That's how I kind of work with it. And I mean, and in my head I'm like, oh my God, if I was like the director and I peeped this, I would have been like, no, don't do this. No, I had someone who was, you know, booming, and like they were talking in the middle of shooting, and I was just like, I had to take them to the side and be like, I was like, look, I know you don't want to be here, but you know, this is our assignment, and you know, we kind of have to, you know, just trying to be neutral, you know, not be bossy, because it's hard, but it's hard because like there's like a line between being bossy and being like,
say it,
you know,
being don't be afraid to say it.
Being a what?
Being nice. I think there's like a line between like,
you have to be a leader.
You have to be a leader. At the end of the day, a leader isn't always a nice person though, too. Yeah. You must remember that. A leader is somebody who can motivate people to do what is necessary to fulfill a task.
Yeah.
Right? That's a leader, right? So you don't necessarily have to be all freaking happy-go-lucky to get the task done. It's preferred that it's that way. But if somebody's having a problem getting the understanding the message that you are sending and is not getting the job done, if all is exhausted, then sometimes you have to be a little bit aggressive with how you explain things. That doesn't mean put your hands on them, obviously, but it definitely means raising your voice. And it definitely means being a little bit of an authoritarian on that part to that
person. Yeah, think of it like a, think of it sometimes, sometimes the job is being a coach in a sense that think of the coach giving the impassioned, stern fucking pep talk at halftime. That's what you call it, right? Halftime?
Yeah, you got it. You got it. The halftime speech. You got it.
Yeah. So there's times where you as a filmmaker, Natalia, will need to give people that impassioned, you know, pep talk probably.
So it gets a little complicated because I'm a woman. You know, I, you know, say something or I give a command and to them it's like, oh, she's being emotional. She's being like bitchy. Like there's always those words that kind of like float around, and I've experienced on a set where like I do grip work too. And like, you know, the guys would just be like, oh, you're too delicate for that. It's okay. You don't have to do that. You know? And I'm just like, I could do it. Like I could lift.
Look at Joelle's face.
Right now. I could lift. Like,
listen, I went to film school too. So I know I have a ton of women who are, especially, you know, so you're very petite, and like petite women are often like, really, like they go to lift something, they're like, oh, don't, I got it. No, mother effer, get off of my stuff. It's my job, my corner. It's what I'm doing.
Holy shit, Joelle, you telling me it took a woman's right situation for you to freaking say mother effer instead of saying motherfucker? Are you kidding me right now? All of a sudden, you're going to get PC when now is the time to be as passionate as a motherfucker.
But you went M effer. To Natalia's point, you're trying not to swear at these people because they're your colleagues, right? And right. Holly, the best advice I got from a woman on set was like, remember their names and just do your job. Eventually you'll be in a hiring position, right? If you're going to be the director, you're going to be approving your crews, you're going to be hiring people. Just remember their names.
Bingo.
Just go about your business. There's nothing you can do about it. If they don't do what you tell them, just be like, all right, well, I'm gonna find someone else to do it. We have to keep moving. You know, you can't force someone to do the work, but you can absolutely not hire them when it's time to do that.
By the way, I love it when I see female grips and electrics. They're so the most badass crew members ever. When they're all geared up with their tools and their belts, they look like badasses.
Yeah, that and camera operators too.
Yeah.
Fire. Yeah. I love it. I love it.
Yeah.
I'm working on a show right now that has hired so many women. And it's very diverse, and I'm really happy to be a part of it.
That's so cool.
And so to see that is so freaking awesome, because all we're doing is telling stories, and anybody can tell a story. Am I wrong? Where's the lie?
You're not wrong. All right. But in terms of all our other genius advice, you're welcome.
You're so welcome. You're welcome. Natalia Ortiz. Thank you.
You're welcome. And we wish you luck, and please hire us all one day. By the way, this fan drew a fan art picture of us that Donald and I both put on our stories. And it was a really good drawing, really talented artist. But then I zoomed in on Donald's groin, and I don't know if it's a crinkle in the art.
It's like accurate.
It's accurate.
But
it just shows that the artist chose to give Donald quite a bulge and did not give any of that attention to my scrubs.
Wasn't there a story about some type of CGI around the growing area of a young Donald Faison, from what I heard from Randall? Randall didn't bring that up. Randall brought that up.
I just want to say that this artist, if you zoom in like I did on Donald's area, really probably did you what's the opposite of did you dirty?
Did you justice?
Oh no.
But he or she did me dirty.
Yeah.
No wrinkle.
Anyway.
What movie is this? No dogs. No chopper.
Oh, this is the best movie ever. Down Beverly Hills. That's the late, great Little Richard.
Little Richard plays their neighbor in this Beverly Hills, neighborhood, and he feels like he's getting treated like shit because he's black, and
no choppers
and the white family calls the police, and there's like dogs and choppers and like a SWAT team, and Little Richard comes out, and he goes, "I had a burglar in my house. There were no dogs, no choppers." Joelle, you seen that movie?
I have not seen that movie.
Oh, you've never seen Down and Out in Beverly Hills, Joelle?
No.
Joelle.
I've seen the slums of Beverly Hills.
No, when you guys got to watch Down and Out in Beverly Hills. And I remember the dad's, Richard Dreyfuss is the father, and he's amazing. And he's made his money off hangers. And he has this monologue where he screams at his son because his son's being ungrateful. He's like, "It's hangers that clothe you. It's hangers that feed you." It's an amazing movie. I highly recommend it.
I laughed a lot at that movie. And Little Richard's.
It's Bette Midler too, right?
Bette Midler.
And Nick Nolte.
Yeah.
Richard Dreyfuss.
Little Richard.
Little Richard.
No and the dogs. Dog. And the dog. And the little
no
dog.
No chopper.
No All right. choppers.
All right. You can stay on, Natalia, because I think we did it. We did the show.
We did it. We totally did it.
Don't forget to email Joelle if you want to be a contestant on Date Joelle. And don't forget to buy a ticket to the live show, which is March 26th. Where do they go, Joelle, to buy a ticket?
Oh, boy. Why won't I remember this?
Because it's such a difficult way to say it.
Okay,
you got to
so
make it simpler.
OnLocationLive.com.
It's too much. Can it be like Fake Doctors Live Show? Is there a way we can make it so that they just type Fake Doctors Live Show and that's how they get
I'm
there?
I'm sure if you Google that, yeah. It will pop up. But the address is onlocationlive.com/product/fake doctors real friends.
That's a lot.
Okay, listen.
It is, but I put it in the show notes every week.
It is what it
week.
Is.
Every episode.
Well,
you
can't
can
you do like a link tree thing? Can't
you can
someone...
do like a Bitly or something.
Okay, listen, I will put a link tree on my Instagram so
right,
that you
so
guys can find it.
We'll put links in our Instagram. Joelle, send us links to put in our Instagram headers. All right, everybody. We love you.
Thank
Natalia,
you,
thanks for coming on. And we'll see you all next time. 5, 6, 7, 8.
Stories about a show we made about a bunch of doctors and nurses and